Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Blue Canary. The bird has landed on beautiful Bainbridge Island, conveniently located at 499 Madison Avenue. ASE Master Technician Clint Ramsey brings over 15 years of experience, award-winning diagnostic skill, and a desire to reinvent the automotive repair experience. Schedule an appointment online at bluecanary.biz or call them today at 206-451-4220.
I'm Maria Metzler, the Executive Director of Helpline House. The global pandemic has affected us all differently. If you or your neighbors need food assistance, mental health counseling, rental assistance, or parks and rec vouchers, please reach out. Helpline House can help in many ways. Find us on the web at helplinehouse.org. It's what we do, neighbor helping neighbor.
I got something for your mind, body, and soul. I got something for your mind, body, and soul.
Bystander Podcast. Now here's your host with the most, Tiny Tim.
What's good, Podcastville? You found the Bystander Podcast. Today we are talking wildlife with Dan Chedwick. Hi, Dan. How you doing?
Hello. I'm doing well.
And Lindsay, I don't think I caught your last name.
Wellfelt.
Wellfelt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great name. I like that. Lindsay's a biologist with the Fish and Game Department, and Dan is a captain with the Fish and Wildlife. Let me start with that. Dan, where are you stationed in the state?
I'm a captain for Region 6, which is the entire west side of, the canal, basically. Just start with Bainbridge Island and go west, so the whole peninsula there. Main office is out of Montesano, Washington, and I'm a captain now for just over 6 years, and been with the department for just over 21. So we have a very large and diverse region, and it's been a lot of fun, a lot of challenges, and cougars can be one of them.
When you're in that capacity at your job, what are the type of things that you do on a daily basis?
Well, I wish I could say I have a lot of fun, but now it's at the policy level, and I get out in the field. Let's just say not as much as I wanted to. When I took on this job, I thought, I'm the boss. I can go in the field whenever I want. But this region again has a lot of challenges, mm-hmm. and a lot of wildlife, a lot of fish, and a lot of competing priorities. So.
Is there a lot of violators in the state? Excuse me.
There's violators everywhere. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I mean, how you decide whether there's a lot of violators or not? I mean, that's a moving scale there. So, I would say there are, unfortunately. And there's just not enough of our officers out there. We're always looking for more. We're always needing more. We're always asking for more. And
kind of a solitude type job, correct?
It is. We are out there alone a lot of times. We're in some very remote places, backups often an hour away or more. And then you throw in the coastal environment where our officers are offshore in a vessel and backups a long ways away. So luckily we have our Coast Guard counterparts that are watching over us too. But for the most part, we're on our own and we have to think quick on our feet.
Lindsay, tell me a little bit about your experiences with the department being a biologist.
Yeah, so I am the assistant Baron Cougar specialist. So I work statewide and do kind of all things Baron Cougar. We do research projects. We help, write the management plans, help make recommendations towards different policies. So we do a lot of field work. We're doing a research project right now. I'm working in King County today. We're doing bear work, going to dens, stuff like that. So that's kind of, we're all over the place.
When's the breeding season for bears?
In like the early summer, June.
Okay. And cougars?
Cougars can breed year round. So cougars, it's going to peak kind of in the summertime, and then they'll have kind of a peak in when kittens are born, you know, around August maybe. But cougars are a little different than most species where they can occur year round. It's just induced. So if a female loses her kittens, she can breed again fairly quickly.
How long does a kitten stay with its mom?
So they stay with their moms for about 18 months. So similar to bears, they both kind of do that. But for a cougar might, by the time it's 18 months old, it's going to, or even, 14 months old, it's going to be about the same size as its mom. And a male cougar might even be larger than its mom at that time, but they still don't really have the ability to hunt on their own yet. And so they stay with their mom for that long, because even though they're pretty big by then, they have to stay with her and learn to hunt for quite a while before they can actually make it on their own.
Now, I'm going to have to dispel a lot of things that I may believe or not believe or have heard down the road. Do bears eat their own sometimes?
So a male might try to kill some cubs of a female. They're not going to kill their own cubs, but a male might try to kill the cubs of a female, and then try to breed with her. So they'll stay with their, if a female comes out of the den and has cubs with her, she's not going to breed that year. And so a male might want to kill those cubs so that they can breed with that female in that June.
All right. That's kind of horrible.
It's a rough world out there. So,
so Dan, when you were out in the field, in the real fields, how often did you come around and actually see cougars? They're nocturnal, correct?
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, they are observed during the daytime. I grew up in the outdoors, and I can say how old I am now. Over my lifetime, I've observed two, and not during work. So in the wild without, capture or something like that. So they're elusive. I mean, if you see a cougar, you might as well go buy a lottery ticket. It's
wow, is that rare, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just ask you, how many have you seen?
Yeah, a couple old ladies maybe, but no real cats.
So yeah, exactly. So they're elusive. You don't see them very often. It's pretty exciting if you get to see one.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting to see. On social media, there's so many different viewpoints about cougars, and there's been some sightings, and a lot of people have those Ring cameras now. And this being half rural island, there's some trail cameras as well. So I've actually seen footage of this cougar in the neighborhood, and it got so close that it was near one of the schools, and that's when it got a little frantic here, over here on the island. Lindsay, when somebody says, "Oh my God, I saw a cougar today," what's the kind of protocol once you receive that call from somebody in society?
So that's more of a question for the captain. They're the ones that respond to those type of things. So I'll let him go about it. But okay. For us, I mean, it's seeing a cougar in itself is not a public safety concern. It's not necessarily a concern for anything, but I would, you know, have the captain answer that one.
Sure. So if we get a response or a call for service like that, we're going to respond to it. And, check out the perimeter for the school and just calm everybody down. Right. So if I had my children at a school and there was a cougar sighting, I wouldn't hesitate. I wouldn't be worried about them going outside and playing. Right. But it goes back to the supervision, right?
Right. Schools are go ahead.
Schools are often going to keep the kids inside, call us, we'll respond. And the officer will check the perimeter and make sure that the cat has moved on. And oftentimes that's all it's doing. It's just moving through the area. And again, somebody sees it. And oftentimes it's not a cougar that they see. And it could be a yellow lab or a bobcat even, or just even a house cat. So we do also have our Carilion Bear Dogs. I'm sure a lot of folks have heard about our Carilion Bear Dog program.
No,
we have one of them in our region. And oftentimes we'll use that animal to do a perimeter search for any scent that the animal may have left behind, the cougar left behind. So we'll do a quick cursory check of the area and make sure that it's clear and let school know they can resume normal operations.
Okay, so there was, what, 5 to 8 sightings of this cougar in different locations on and around Bainbridge Island? Is that about where we're at?
Yeah, that's about 5, I believe.
Yeah, you guys have a really cool thing on your website, Cougar Sighting Tracker, that I found, and it said the exact spots of the island that these were seen and such, and I thought that was kind of cool. A plethora of resources on your website, for sure. Why do people hunt cougars? I saw that I was looking at your website today and there's a hunting season for cougars. And I was just like, I've never been in a restaurant and ate cougar meat. I don't have too many sightings of a cougar stuffed in somebody's den or house. Do some hunters just go out for the pleasure of it and to help scale the cougar population?
Go ahead, Lindsay, if you want to take a...
I think everybody has their own reason for why they do it. Some people absolutely do eat cougar meat, but not everybody does. They definitely also use them as trophies, so they'll stuff them, put them up in their house. You know, everybody has their own reason. I mean, it's also one of the few hunting opportunities that we have in the winter, so it's a nice time to get out. For people to go that like to go track animals through the snow, like to stalk them, follow them, you know, that's enjoyable for a lot of people to do.
Now, what is the predatory behavior of a cougar?
So cougars are going to be stalking and ambushing animals. So they are going to be occurring in areas where there's dense cover so they can hide, and then they'll stalk something and then, you know, ambush it.
Now, is it true that they don't overeat and want to watch their figure and they will half bury a carcass and throw some sticks over the top and come back later?
Yeah. So they will, once they make a kill, they will usually pull it out of the way, move it from where it was. If they need to, they'll cover it with dirt and sticks and whatever else to help preserve it, help kind of keep the stink down. You know, when the bears are out, bears might come and take them if they leave them, but they'll feed off of that carcass for, you know, up to a week or so.
Yeah, there was a fawn killed on the south side of the island last week, and it looks like it was dragged into the road by a bunch of coyotes, and they got the whole pack munching on it. People were all up in arms, but it seemed like the cougar had killed some sheep and some goats on the island, and it looked like I don't know what it looks like, but is it possible that a cougar hunts for enjoyment too? Such as they see a moving object and they want to just chase it down like a house cat would?
I mean, there's the possibility, but they're not necessarily like surplus killers. I mean, I know people like to think of animals like that, but they're going to hunt to eat.
And some
of them, I think they would, you know, they would jump on a lot more things if all they wanted to do was catch stuff and kill it.
So deer's their favorite, correct? And beaver, what else do they like to eat? Goat and sheep, of course.
Yeah, if it's available and easy to get. So, deer and elk are going to be their main source of prey. Beavers here in Western Washington, mountain beavers here in Western Washington, I know they will eat bighorn sheep in Eastern Washington, stuff like that. Usually just large mammals.
And do they eat it on the ground? They carry it up in the trees, or do they do both?
No, like you said before, they'll cover it up and leave it usually on the ground.
Okay. So mountain goat, right? There's a huge project. I believe your department took over relocating mountain sheep in Washington State. Is that correct? Mountain goats, mountain sheep, what do you call them?
So there's two. So there's mountain goats and there's bighorn sheep. We did move a lot of mountain goats off of the Olympic Peninsula, so they weren't native to there. And we're causing some habitat destruction, so the agency was moving them out of that area. Usually that's a little bit higher than cougars would normally be, but there's no reason why they couldn't take one of those as well.
Now, where do you take those goats? Where's their new habitat?
So those goats got taken to the Cascades. So that's kind of their normal range. And they were released several areas throughout the North Cascades.
Dan, on that type of process, how do you finance that? And is there inherent dangers of moving these goats to your workers?
Well, that project was mainly in conjunction with the wildlife program there. So I don't have a lot of information on that goat relocation. It wasn't part of my enforcement program. So I don't have a lot of information for you to give.
Yeah, because I thought I heard that one of the helicopters that was transporting it got into some trouble and crashed. Is that something you recall at all?
I don't have any information on that.
He pleads the fifth, people. So
yeah, I didn't hear anything about that either. I know that, I mean, a lot of them were taken out of Olympic National Park. So obviously I think the Park Service was involved pretty heavily on that aspect.
And then our wildlife program was also helping them with that. And so the Department of Fish and Wildlife, we have our programs, our fish program, wildlife habitat, enforcement programs, all part of it. So we're kind of our own shops inside Department of Fish and Wildlife.
All right, Lindsay, this is the home run question that I want to answer. It's a three-parter here. A lot of debate on social media about the cougar sighting and what to do. Some people want it euthanized. Some want it relocated. A lot of people want to just coexist with it and just, hey, bring your cat and dog in the house, hang out in groups. Just be smart about it. What is you guys' responsibility and what's the good thing to do in this situation? And if you were to catch this cougar, and are you actively trapping it, what would you do with it if you did catch it?
Okay, so...
A lot in there, sorry. You can just take pieces
that's fine.
Out of it.
I'll help you.
Yeah, Captain has, I know, some aspects of that down a little bit better than I would. But so basically, this animal, because it has depredated on some small livestock, it's our policy that we would lethally remove this animal. If it had just been observed on Bainbridge Island and, you know, been killing deer and doing its kind of normal cougar thing, there isn't really any other reason why we, you know, we might want to relocate it, but we might just let it do its own thing and move on, which it probably would do. The island's only about 65 square miles. So, you know, there is some habitat on there, but it's 65 square miles is really only the size of like a small female cougar home range, where a male would need like 2 to 3 times that space. And so it, you know, the island itself could support maybe one cougar for a short amount of time, but eventually it's, you know, it's not going to be able to support a breeding population. There's no resident population there. So eventually that cougar would normally just move on. So if it hadn't caused any depredations or something like that, I would say we probably could just leave it alone and it would move on, or it would be an easy one that we could, you know, move into a better spot where it might do a little better. But because of this depredation issue, that's a policy that we have to follow, that enforcement has to follow. And that's where we are kind of at this point.
So it's a bad cat because it got domestic animals.
Well, so it showed up in an area where those type of foods were available, and it's going to take advantage of that. And so that's something that, you know, even if we do lethally remove this animal, that's not going to prevent it from happening again in the future. So people need to be aware that cougars and bears, you know, might occur on Bainbridge Island. And so to prevent this from happening again in the future, need to take steps to, you know, keep their livestock secured. And so that if a cougar or a bear or, you know, even a coyote or a bobcat comes around, it's not going to have this easily available food source.
So obviously this cougar can swim, because we live on an island. That was news to me, because I don't think somebody brought it from the circus or the zoo and just dropped it off here. And now in Bremerton, a short swim through the channel, it's been sighted over there, apparently. How far can a cougar swim? And is it something that they do often, or just seeking out more food? What made him decide to swim over to our island?
So cougars are big time dispersers. So they grow up in an area with their mom, and when they're about 18 months old, especially a male, is going to disperse. So they might travel, you know, 150 miles just following prey, following forested corridors, and then end up somewhere and decide to go there. So it's not unusual for a cougar, especially if it can, you know, can see across the channel and see that there's something over there. It's probably not going to just swim out into the into the ocean, but if it sees that there's something over there, it's probably going to go check it out and say, hey, is this someplace that I want to be? Is there food here? Are there other cougars here? Because it doesn't really know at this point. So they're just out there looking around, trying to figure out where to go. And it turned out that, you know, there was food there and there was some security, and decided to stay for a while.
Do we know if
I don't think that they've, like, anybody's tested to see how far they'll swim, but I know people have seen them swimming across Lake Chelan, swimming across Lake Whatcom up in Whatcom County, which is a pretty big lake. So they'll do it for sure.
And do we know if this is a male or female cougar yet?
I don't think we do know. I think that everybody expects that it's probably a young male, because those are the ones that are going to be traveling around and doing, you know, most of the long distance dispersals, but it could potentially be a female. They will occasionally go look around as well.
And cougars are solo animals, right? They breed, dad takes off, quick divorce, kid hangs out for a year and a half, takes off to college, and then they're pretty much by themselves, correct?
Yeah, so for the most part, they're going to spend most of their time by themselves. Obviously, like I said before, females will have their kittens with them. So a lot of times you'll see, you know, three cougars that all look about the same size. So it looks kind of like, you know, cougars hanging out, but that's just going to be a female with kittens. They might occasionally kind of come together. You know, females' home ranges will overlap their moms and maybe one of their siblings. And so they might come together for a very short time if there's a big carcass or something like that to feed. But for the most part, they're going to be solitary.
Family reunion, huh? So are they like a domestic cat where they can have multiples, multiple children?
Yeah. So they're going to have like usually two or three.
Okay. Now that it looks like it's left the island, does that euthanization status change at all? Like he came in, got some lamb chops and took off?
Yeah, it does. So any wildlife that we respond to, dangerous wildlife, if you will, that's a policy we're working under, is a dangerous wildlife response. Mm-hmm. So anytime we respond to dangerous wildlife, we look at the actions of the animal. And so in this case, we had three depredations happen within a month. And we were trying to trap on the island there and try to capture the cougar at that time while it had current depredations. Mm-hmm. And then here we haven't heard of this cat on Bainbridge Island proper, Bainbridge Island, not talking about where it's possibly swam across, maybe left the island. But the last report on Bainbridge Island was January 27th. So we have had some sightings west of there, across the pond, if you will. And there is some speculation that possibly it could be that cat. And we have had some sightings. And just a sighting alone, we're not going to respond necessarily, unless it's that school example you talked about earlier. So to circle back and answer your question, yes, currently it kind of changes what we're doing right now is just monitoring. So if there was another depredation, we would respond and act, follow our policy again, which is, capture it, talk to our conflict folks, our wildlife biologist, Lindsay, her staff, and determine the best course of action. But again, likely on a depredation, we will lethally remove that animal.
So it's not absolute. It's case by case.
Absolute. We have very knowledgeable staff. Our officers are trained. You know, we have our, like I just said, our conflict folks, our wildlife biologists, and we work through decision making pretty quick on the course of action. But again, we're guided by our policy that if it depredates, if it's a public safety issue and we can capture that lion, a cougar, and it's depredated or is creating a public safety risk, we'll lethally remove that. But if there's some factors that change that, we're quick to adapt to it and make different decisions. So the actions of the animal determine our actions.
What does a cougar trap look like?
Our live traps are big box traps. They're big metal cages. They're you know, picture a cougar easily walking into one of those. However, they're not that successful. They're just like any trap, and cougars are wary. They're smart animals, and trapping one takes quite a bit of skill. So, you know, we set that trap up three different times and didn't have any success with it. So our best success at capturing cougar is with hounds or you know, if we can find the right scenario, or Karelian bear dogs on a leash. To, you know, a pack animal is the best tool for capturing a lion.
So that would look like a bunch of dogs and somebody tracking with a rifle? And that's kind of the best way to catch the cougar.
Yeah. And if we do respond where we have a depredation and we do call up a houndsman to bring their hounds in, our officers go with them. So we're right along with them when this is all happening.
Interesting.
And on Bainbridge Island, it's not conducive to running a pack of hounds. It's too populated. And so that's why the trap was deployed in these situations.
So Lindsay, about how far does a cougar travel throughout the course of a day?
I mean, it depends on the day. So like I said before, you know, their home ranges might be for a female, like 75 square miles and a male, you know, 150 square miles. So they're going to be traveling throughout. Yeah. They've got really big home ranges. So they're going to be traveling throughout their home range, you know, over a week or so, or 10 days, they're going to be kind of, especially a male, they're going to be just kind of going around their territory, making sure no other males are going through there. So they can travel around quite a bit. You know, if it was a female with kittens, they're not going to be moving around as much. But for any solitary cougar, they're going to be traveling several miles a day. And so, you know, any cougar, you know, if the cougar did leave Bainbridge, there's really no saying where it went and where it is right now. So there's really not, wouldn't really be any way for us to know where it was. It's not like we've caught it and been able to tag it or anything like that.
Gotcha. And how fast can cougars move?
They can sprint really fast. I can't think of the number off the top of my head. They can sprint really fast, but they're like, you know, 100-yard, they're like a, you know, like a sprinter in the Olympics that does like the 50 or 100-yard dash. They can go really fast, but for only just a short period of time. So they're going to be in the cover and ambush something really fast, but they're not going to chase anything down.
What are some of the rules that people should have when walking around and, you know, just the cougar care? Like, I understand we should have big groups. I shouldn't run up a tree. Shouldn't dangle my love handles at it and say, hey, want some? What are some of the precautions that we can take?
So I always, you know, advise people that really no matter where you are in Washington, you're going to be in potential kind of bear or cougar habitat. And so you really want to be aware of your surroundings. You know, if you see any tracks, if you see any dead animals, you're going to want to avoid those areas. You know, don't put your hood up, especially at night. Don't, if you're going on a run, don't run with your earbuds in. Be able to listen, be able to be aware. I'm a really strong proponent of bear spray. I carry it with me all the time, pretty much no matter where I go, hiking around. I see cougar tracks and bear tracks all the time because I'm always looking, but yeah, so that's something that I would definitely support people, you know, carry it, know how to use it. There's lots of tools online on how to properly use bear spray.
I heard you should not run, climb trees, and maintain eye contact as you slowly back away, kind of be in groups whenever possible.
Yeah, so I would stop, you know, wave your arms, appear large. Usually once they know they've been seen, they're going to try to go away. And, you know, obviously it's, if it tries to attack you, you're going to be wanting to fight back as much as you possibly can.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to fight back. I'm not just going to be a Scooby snack.
They can climb, both bears and cougars can climb trees like you wouldn't believe. So
no, I believe.
And are really fast. Definitely not something, you know, running, obviously it will kind of trigger that, you know, this is the prey.
Prey drive.
Yeah, you don't want them to think that you're prey. So talking, you know, if you have a whistle, a lot of backpacks these days have kind of whistles on the buckles, on the chest.
So loud noises do deter them?
Yeah, they will.
I have one of those little air horns because I've run into coyotes a lot because I'm outside so much.
Yeah, that's a great one.
That seems to work really well. We have pretty dense coyote population here as well. If I can get off topic for a moment, what are the predators for coyotes? Like cougar. What was that?
Cougar.
Cougar.
Wolves will kill them. You guys don't have wolves yet, or maybe ever. Not, you know, people.
Okay. How's funding going for the program? Are you guys getting enough tax money to do everything that you want to do? Is cougar sighting something that takes a lot of resources? If you were going to go out and try to trap, is that a lot of resources as well?
You know, it's It's all about our officer time, and like I mentioned earlier, we just simply don't have enough officers with all the competing priorities that we have. But when we have a cougar depredation or a public safety issue, I mean, that's number one priority that we're going to respond to. So we'll make it happen and do what we can do to mitigate the issue here. But as far as funding and all that, you know, we always have our hand out, ask for more officers and everything else. Right. So it's like any agency. So
that's a reminder. If you like this show, please tell a friend and subscribe on Patreon. Support the show so we can get more good content like this. Podcastville, you've done a great job in supporting about 130 podcasts like this. Very unique situations in a very beautiful place of Bainbridge Island, Olympic Peninsula, Kitsap County, King County, on and around Seattle. Lindsay and Dan, I really appreciate your time. Hopefully this clears up some things. And last question before we go, if somebody wanted to join your organization and had interest in fisheries and wildlife, where's a good place for them to start? And where's your biggest need as an organization?
Well, Lindsay, go ahead.
You know, We, if it's in terms of volunteers, we have stuff on our website. We have employment opportunities on our website. I started, you know, my job just as a tech, you know, for 3 months at a time. And, you know, through school and experience was able to work my way in. But we love to have more people, love to have a more diverse workforce. And we're always looking for more people to join our team.
What kind of volunteer opportunities are there? Is that like beach cleanups? What?
It depends. I think there's usually lists on the website for like specific tasks. I know I had a friend whose mom one time volunteered to drive sharp-tailed grouse across the state because they were translocating them. You know, there's all sorts of different things.
Wow.
That come up. I think with COVID, a lot of our volunteer stuff might have slowed down a little bit just because of the a little bit tricky, but we're always looking for people that want to help.
Yeah, grouse is a neat bird. There's one flock on the island, really beautiful private farm adjacent to the Grand Forest. And I see 30 or 40 grouse out there and they're all having a good time. But that's something I grew up. My family hunted a lot of grouse. That was their chosen bird. So don't see them enough, though. They're cool birds. All right.
Jim, for enforcement and for all of our programs in WDFW, we have a website just like everybody, and they can find all the information they need. You know, like if they're interested in my career, which is a great career, I highly recommend it. We have our enforcement link on there, and we have a Facebook page, department Facebook page, enforcement Facebook page, and they can go on there and start the process of researching who we are and what we do, and then my email's on there. Anybody can go on there and email me, and when we get through this COVID time, we can start picking up and our writers, our writership. We have a lot of young folks that are looking to get in this career. We'll take them out on a ride along.
Oh, cool.
See what it's like. So the website, I would say, is the first place to start looking.
And I just had another question pop in my head. How many phone calls did you get about this cougar approximately?
In what?
Did you just get the 5 sightings and 5 people called you, or did the phone not ring? Or it started to ring off the hook like it's Cleo's helpline or something.
Yeah. I mean, we had the depredations and then we had a few sightings, and I can almost guarantee you there was a lot more sightings that were unreported that, you know, people had on their game cameras, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, we hear about that all the time where cougars are spotted on game cameras and they're not, they're not causing anybody any harm, and we don't need to respond to those. We'll keep track of them, and we'll report on them where the sightings are. But again, most of these cougars are just doing what cougars do. You seldom see them, and they're not causing any trouble, and that's the way we like it. And that's hopefully what this cougar has decided to do now. It's not causing any trouble, and it can just disappear and be done with it.
I think he had some opinions about the people here on the island, and that's why he left. That number is, tell me if this is the correct number in case you do see a cougar. Is it 877-933-9847? Or is it 360-902-2200? Because on most social media, those were the two dominant numbers that kept popping up saying, you must call them. You must call them and report this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why people would say you must call and report this, but you don't have to report every cougar sighting you see. I mean, it's not something that we need to respond to, but we'll keep track of it. Just like right now, these reports that we have on the sightings on the west side, mm-hmm. we're calling up, trying to get a confirmation. If somebody has a video, we'll confirm it that way. And then we'll put it on that report tool that you came across, which shows where all the cougar reports are and
very cool tool. All right. Well, Lindsay and Dan, I appreciate you coming on to the Bystander Podcast and talking a little bit. It's kind of gone cougar crazy here because everybody's, it's COVID times and they have nothing to do but look at their computer and talk cougar. So the discussion has got thousands of threads. So it's disarming to hear both of you talk, and that we can just move on from this little cougar visit and say goodbye. So, yeah, thank you both for your time, and I wish you all the best, and I hope this weather changes for the better so you can be outside in the woods enjoying it in all its glory that the PNW brings.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure, Lindsay. Thank you, Dan. You've been listening to the Bystander Podcast. Be kind.